Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kess, with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
Oh, hey guys, what's happening?
That was so unexcited.
I was just trying to change it up, so I'm normally like, hey guys, what's going on?
Yeah, that's great. It's like you're an old-timey radio host. And today we have Andrew Brown, GP Denver winner, right here at the table.
Yay, thanks for having me, Alex.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
It was funny, we were literally talking, the podcast released after you won, was us talking about how you're going to win one day, and it was retroactively you had won, so it was kind of...
Yeah, we recorded
just
like
wrong.
3 weeks prior, and there's a long portion of the middle where we're like, Andrew Brown's just grinding right now. He's just trying to make it happen. He's just getting so close, and then you literally won, and it came out a day and a half later.
What can I say? Easy, right?
Yeah. That's one of the things we're talking about today. So today we're going to be talking about two things. The other crazy thing that happened just this morning was the banned and restricted list announcement for all of Magic was released, and we'll get to that in a second.
For our purposes, four cards were banned from the Modern format.
Yeah, for Modern, four of them. Well, actually, the same one was banned and or restricted in the other ones. But
yes.
and then we're going to talk about how to play Control. We're avoiding doing any specific deck techs right now because... it's kind of in flux, and we wanted to wait till after the Pro Tour before we start just making up things, because we've already kind of done multiple brews for you guys, and we want to kind of get to some hard facts when we talk about what decks are good or bad in Modern.
Before we start brewing with Duskmantle Guildmage and
Golgari Grave Troll.
slightly more relevant card.
Speaking of which, the banned and restricted list, it happened, and four cards were banned. The one that everyone knew was going to happen, Treasure Cruise, the one everyone thought was going to happen, Dig Through Time, the one many, many people dreaded, Birthing Pod. And then Golgari Grave Troll is back. And I'm currently screaming around the building in my own personal victory lap because I've been wanting that card in the format since it was created.
I texted Alex like 14 minutes after the list went up. Like, I just forgot it was even happening. This morning I woke up, I saw the tweet, and I saw Grave Troll. That was the only thing I even paid attention to. I just texted, let the brewing begin. Like, that was it.
Oh, I had, like, fever dreams last night being like, oh, they're not going to unban it. It's not going to happen.
For those of you who can't see, he's shivering and grabbing his arms right now. Because this is an audio podcast. If it wasn't obvious.
So, yeah. So, what do you guys think that means?
Well,
let's start with, I guess, the Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time being gone forever.
So, sure. I had a conversation with Andrew on the phone probably, what, a week and a half ago?
Yeah.
I called you just to talk exactly about this. What do you think? And I feel like you actually predicted exactly this. You definitely said Cruise. You definitely said Dig.
And
you definitely
pod.
Said Pod.
I told Alex yesterday at the pre-release it was going to be Dig, Cruise, Pod. But I didn't anticipate Grave Troll being unbanned. But, I mean, if it's going to be good, it's going to have to, like, spawn its entire new deck. It's not like an addition to a deck.
I mean, we've talked about Grave Troll to a certain extent a lot in this podcast, but basically it comes down to most likely it's not going to do a whole lot. If it does, it's a deck that didn't exist already, which is good for the format. And the worst case scenario is that deck is too good, which would be pretty surprising.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that was previously when we talked about this, the one hesitation we had for Golgari Grave Troll being unbanned was Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruiser in the format. It might just make those cards too good.
Right.
But that's no longer an issue for the previous stated reasons. So, yay.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So first, let's just address, like, I think everybody knew that Cruise was going. That was sort of the obvious, like, the most obvious, the most overplayed, like, had to leave. And my prediction, I think, when I talked to you, is that I didn't think they were going to ban Dig. I thought that maybe Dig Through Time would stay in the format, and they would sort of let people feel it out. Because I feel like, even though it's two of the top seven, two mana is so much different than one, and it's double blue, that it just seemed like it would be a little bit more of like a... you couldn't just jam it into a burn deck, or like... you would have to like work with it a little bit more.
Right. I mean, the decks that Dig made better, they just made them more consistent, while Treasure Cruise, like, supercharged a few decks that, like, were problematic. Mm-hmm. I think they just chose the safer route. I think that, like, I've talked to people, and they generally, the consensus is that Dig Through Time would have just been much worse in Delver, and yeah. so it wouldn't have been as much of an issue. But it's, you know, they're the same kind of card, basically. They figured, why not just get rid of both, save, you know, it cover promotes, all the bases, and just
yeah.
walk away from this mistake.
It sort of promotes, like, non-interactive gameplay in, like, really kind of unfair strategies, and it just makes them better. It's kind of like you ban, like, Preordain and Ponder because you don't want those decks to just be better, so you just make
right.
them slightly worse. I guess it's kind of the same thinking, right?
Yeah. Well, they had to play Serum Visions, which is not the best card.
And everybody plays it anyway.
Yeah.
And then the one thing, I mean, we talked about this last week, and I predicted pretty much a similar thing. The one thing I did say is that Bloodbraid Elf was coming back with it, and
that card's really good.
It's really good. I think it's worse than Rhino to a certain extent, or at least it's comparable to Rhino.
Siege Rhino, he's referencing.
Yeah, Sage Rhino.
Sage Rhino. Every single time in last week's podcast when we were doing the preview, they. Every time he said Siege, you would say Sage. And there's, like, so many Sages in Magic.
Sage of Epitier?
Yeah. You know I love Sage of Epitier. But, no, like, what...
It's a free index, guys.
Like, Monastery Sage, or, like, the five, you know, whatever, Sages at Sieges in the new yeah. set. Every time, it'd be like, what was the blue one? What's
Monastery it? Siege?
Yeah, Monastery Siege. Like, what card is that? It's like a 1-2 creature?
No, it's enchantment. Dragons are attacking. They're saging.
Of course.
Yeah. I think with Rhino in the format, it offers a different choice. I also think they are holding on to it mm-hmm. for just, like, the next time they need to ban something or unban something for a Modern Pro Tour, they're like, well, Bloodbraid Elf's back. Like, there's a limited resources of cards they can unban, so why not hold on to one that they just kind of banned recently, so it's not that necessary to bring it back.
Right.
Let Rhino kind of have its time in the sun, and then we'll move on.
It would have been interesting with Bloodbraid Elf in the format, and Pod still in the format, to have, like, creature clashing, because Pod kind of, like, alienated all the other creature strategies by just being too value, too powerful.
Right.
And if you can introduce Bloodbraid Elf into the kind of Junk Jun style of deck, like, maybe they could actually have some meaningful creature fights.
Right.
Instead of just this one-sided annihilation of Kitchen Fink's voices and restoration
right,
animals,
right. Just, like, the best possible creatures and having the exact one you need at all times available to you.
Yeah.
I was having a little, well, I wasn't, like, super expecting this to happen, but I was kind of hoping that Ancestral Vision might come off the list. I sort of, like, when I guess I was just more thinking about it in the sense that, like, the Delver decks and those decks, they don't really want to draw a card they have to wait 4 turns for late in the game. They're, like, annoyed by it. So it just goes into control decks, I guess.
I think if Treasure Cruise wasn't as dominating as it was,
yeah.
like, if they had released Treasure Cruise and it just, like, was it modern and was just fine, then they would have unbanned it because then it made no sense. But the fact they were, like, this card's too powerful, it didn't work, has kind of probably cemented it never coming back.
What decks do you think, if you were going to unban Ancestral Vision, like, what decks right now does it immediately go into? Blue, White, Red probably is the one that comes to mind.
Delver, Paw, every could, blue deck.
Could go
almost.
I mean, it could go into Delver if you draw it on turn one. I just feel like...
It'd be good in a lot of awkward combo decks like Amulet.
Sure, yeah, right.
Because, like, you play it and then you just let it sit there for a little bit. And then there's also...
4 turns. I mean, 4 turns in Modern is an eternity if, like, one player has the
right,
advantage.
But the turn you get it, you basically win. Because you just drew 3 cards for free.
Well, you draw, like, 4 cards on the turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
What do you guys think? Is it possible that Siege Rhino is now just going to dominate the format just by itself and be, like, the strongest card in the format?
So, in the Modern before cons, Siege Rhino didn't exist, and none of these cards existed. Like,
right.
Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time didn't exist. Birthing Pod was more of a combo deck, and which made a lot of matchups, like, against Blue-Eye Red, not very good for the Blue-Eye Red player, because they could just outvalue you. But now, with Pod being gone, I think it's going to lead towards Siege Rhino being in the junk, like, the
yeah,
junk...
it'll be what Jund was is now.
Yeah, the junk resource decks, so, like, Lingering Souls, Liliana, and, like, Thoughtseize, Tarmogoyf.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, a lot of my good friends played this deck in Omaha, right?
Right.
And it turned out to be really good for them. But now I think with Pod gone, I think Blue Air Red has a chance again.
Okay.
And I'm really excited to sleeve up some Path to Exiles again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. Path just got a lot better.
Yeah.
Before, where you're like, shooting their Delver and they're ramping on turn one. Now you're shooting their Rhino on turn four and it's no longer relevant. It's exactly what it's kind of supposed to do.
Yeah. It feels like with the way Modern's built, and I mean, Rhino, for the purpose of value, is a really good card, but it doesn't seem like it's that easy to dominate with just like a four mana creature. Like it seems like it, just because of the format, because of what's happening on turns two and three, the way they want it to be a turn four format, that's kind of exactly the kind of card they want to be good in Modern, because it's very much like, you can just counter it, or like,
right,
yeah,
kill
Remand,
it.
Yeah, or
and like another reason Rhino is so good in the pod deck is because it played birds, right? You could power out your four mana insane creature like a turn earlier. So final thoughts.
Well, and also like Finks into Rhino is just like nuts.
Yeah, Finks into Rhino. You want to kill me? Anyways, so final thoughts. Do you guys think that they did a good job with the bans?
I think they could have left Dig Through Time, but I do think the safety valve of just getting rid of everything and calling it a day makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty happy. I mean, Golgari Graveshul being back just makes me all types of happy. So really, they could have done anything else and I'd be fine.
I mean, I pulled up. I watched a little bit of the coverage of Omaha while it was on, and then
did you see me?
I did actually. They jumped over to you as a live look-in. I was like, sweet. "Stay on the game, stay on the game." You won a GP. I just hit the mic. I watched some of the coverage live, and then over the last two or three days, I watched every match that was covered. I just went through them all because I love Modern, and like, one thing I noticed that was really annoying was, other than like the few times you would see like the Amulet deck, which was awesome, Merfolk. And then that super, super sweet version of Scapeshift.
Oh, yeah, the like, red-green Scapeshift deck?
Yeah, with, like, Emrakul. So cool.
Yeah, I actually talked to that guy during the tournament.
He Scott Lipp, right?
Yeah, he was a really cool guy. He like, walked up to our group, and he's like, hey, man, I really want a double draw. Can you, like, show me the math on this?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of, like, he came up with the deck list himself, and he was kind of new, and he just didn't know how, like, tiebreakers worked and everything.
Right.
But, we put his Fierce Rest, and he got a double draw, and he made it in.
That deck is sweet. But other than those three decks, like, I just saw so many copies of Blue Red Delver, Pod, and I guess really just those two. And it's so just like from a viewer standpoint, someone who really loves Modern and like really likes to pay attention to the format, I was just annoyed. I was like, I want to see more of the other decks.
The top eight for that tournament was really deceptive. Because the top eight was kind of really diverse. I mean, they did have, like, two pod lists and two...
The three lists I just, like,
Delver,
mentioned.
But, like,
were, like,
four
awesome.
Crazy decks.
Yeah,
but if like, you, like, take it down to top 16, more than 50% was either pod or Delver.
Yeah. The top tables at that deck were, at that tournament, were really messed up. It was just all, like, blue-red Delver mirrors, like, pod mirrors. It was pretty gross. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And so for that reason... when you can change the format, really, I mean, like, look, we're going to keep playing, and Wizards is going to do whatever they want. So, like, if they want to ban a bunch of cards and then unban some cards, we'll be like, oh my god, it's so inconsistent, let's just go play Magic anyway. Like, we're not going to change our behavior. So, like, please, change the format, make it more interesting, because that's, make the game healthier.
Yeah.
I do feel bad for Austin, who's, like, he just qualified for a Pro Tour also, and he, like...
he's put in so many hours with Pod.
Right, so many hours with Pod. Not even that, every single banning... since really Modern has like solidified the format, he has had like the deck that he was playing banned out from under him. He was playing Storm when Seething Song got banned. He was playing Eggs when Eggs got banned.
I forgot about that.
He was playing Jund with Death Rite, and now he's playing Pod, and that's gone.
Well, I mean, it's kind of justice,
right?
On his part for playing the worst decks. But all in all, I think they did a great job with the banning, and I think it's going to make Modern better. And we're going to see a lot of decks at the Pro Tour, and I'm really excited. And we have three of our friends going, so good luck to them.
Yeah. You'll be on the front lines helping them test and figuring out how to, like, break it.
Got battle scars already.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but between this Pro Tour and next Pro Tour, there's now, like, four of, like, the original, like, whatever, seven or eight people from the Heidi Ho crew that are, like, going to these two Pro Tours, which is, like, pretty miraculous.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've talked about this before. Have you guys come up with a sweet team name yet? Because I've been trying to, like, you know.
When Eugene and I go, we're going to, we're getting some hoodies made, so we're going to wear those.
Just, like, Team Heidi Ho?
Just Heidi Ho Gaming.
Okay. Yeah, fair. So it's, like, store.
Yeah.
It's not, I wanted you guys to be like something like Shadow Thunder. Like something like really outrageous.
Yeah. I don't know. Outrageous team names at the Pro Tour, that's kind of like.
You guys could call yourselves like really silly.
I mean, you could be Team Heidi-Ho, but then on the back of the shirts have like one of those presidents riding a tiger with shotguns coming out of his hands, like on the back, just like, yeah.
Are you kidding? If I ever make it to a Magic Pro Tour and I'm on like a team, I'm going to come up with like the most like just random, like I'm going to have a hoodie that says like single mothers on it. Like I really want people to go up and be like, really? Your team's called Single Moms? Like, yeah. What do you have to say about it? And just have a story about having a single mom, which I don't have.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't at all. That's why it's funny. Let's go. Let's keep moving. Keep all
moving. Right. So standard, not standard. So control.
Yes, control.
So you took a control deck to the championship. You have that nice little trophy.
I do have a trophy. It broke already.
It broke already?
Yeah, it's the worst.
I didn't want to say this, but I'm going to say it.
Wait, before we got into this control conversation, there's something we didn't mention. Yeah. I really would like to bring up. Okay,
we're going back.
Jessica Ascendancy is something I just wanted to touch on real fast.
Sure.
Moved on.
Right.
So I kind of thought Jessica Ascendancy was going to get banned for a minute there because it seems like one of those engine cards. They like to ban the cards that don't interact with anything else. So with it still in the format, what does that deck now look like?
It looks like the original Glittering Wish version with Cerulean Wisps, Crimson Wisps.
Right.
Are you sure? Because that's the one I think is gone. I think the fact that Treasure Cruise is no longer available makes that deck worse because they don't have... Like, when I watch coverage, the main reason they would survive is because they would, like, cantrip, basically fizzle. But then, oh, wait, I have Treasure Cruise to keep going. Yeah. Where
that is the version that's gonna be around, though.
You think that's the one versus the controlly one that just like they can just play a different control draw card spell?
Yeah, I mean, Eugene played that version at Omaha and we tested it a lot, and it would just be so outstandingly bad without Dig and Cruise.
Got it.
He was playing 4 Dig, 2 Cruise,
right?
I mean, the other one, it doesn't have to rely on Dig and Cruise so much because more of its cards cantrip. It's
right.
More of like an all-in combo.
It'll
deck.
Just play a different kind of cantrip-y search card.
Because the blue-eyed version, the strict blue-eyed version, the one without green, it played like Path and Lightning Bolt.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the other one, it has like
Cerulean Wisps.
Cerulean Wisps, Crimson Wisps, Is It Charm, Serum Visions. Just it's literally all cantrips.
Right.
And I think that one is less susceptible to being damaged by the loss of Cruise and Dig.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible it could still be out there, but I don't think it's going
to
be very good.
The original version was able to win because it could play birds into with like a probe to untap birds, and that would just go nuts, right? That was how the deck worked?
Yeah, it would be birds into Ascendancy probe. And then
it could win, yeah.
So can that version that was able to do that previously still win on turn two? Just crazy and consistently, kind of like Storm
Can? It's probably 50% less consistent to do so, but it's like everything is still there. It just doesn't have the like draw three cards.
The massive engine that like made it so just like, could you refill your hand?
I mean, it didn't rely too hard on Cruise and Dig.
Sure.
Cruise just made it so it fizzled less.
Right.
Yeah.
The issue with it is that it's still the deck that can go, 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 fizzle, but then still have their hand filled with cards because they just cantripped and like ran out of mana.
The green one is more all-in, for sure.
So, but Wizards doesn't really mind as much a deck that like more consistently is going to go for it on turn 3 or 4 and probably win on 4. But if it tries to go on 2 or 3, it probably will fizzle. They want combo decks that win on 4. That's what the point is.
Right.
They want like consistent combo to be turn 4. So a good example of that would be Splinter Twin. Right. The stuff they're like okay with existing, but like are keeping an eye out are like Gora's Vengeance decks can win on turn 2, turn 3. Mm-hmm. The Amulet of Vigor deck can win pretty early.
Yeah.
Like both of those decks can do it, but it's like a glass cannon in that section of their game plan. And they're more like once they get to turn 3, turn 4 is when they're actually more consistently gonna go off.
Yeah. Right. The green Jeskai Ascendancy one, it is more glass cannon because Fate Stitcher is so outrageously hard to interact with because it can't be Abrupt Decayed and it
I mean Glittering Wish, the Abrupt Decay is just the problem, and that's Abrupt Decay decks are not going away.
Yeah.
Just because Pod's gone, like, Junk is still around.
Yeah, like, Junk is going to destroy the Ascendancy deck, because it can Abrupt Decay Ascendancy, Abrupt Decay...
A bird.
Yeah, it's pretty rough for that.
It can Liliana the Keratid, which is, like, their normal, like, this is how we get through creature removal.
Yeah. It's a very fragile deck that it has the potential to be very powerful.
Okay, fair enough. So I just was wondering if it totally suffered, but it sounds like it's just a little worse, it's a little more fair.
Yeah.
And it's a little less frightening.
Like, originally the deck didn't even have Treasure Cruise in it.
It just, they put it in there and then it was, like, turbocharged it.
Yeah, but then Jester Layton came out with the strictly blue-red version, which is just, like, completely superior.
Right.
It didn't have to, like, run Glittering Wish.
Sure. That's the Fate Stitcher.
Or birds or anything. Yeah,
Fate Stitcher version does not have Glittering Wish.
Right.
Yeah.
Face this year, that was like pretty awesome tech. All right, so let's move on to where we were talking before. Andrew won a Grand Prix playing Control.
Yeah,
and
Control.
Playing Control is difficult to do. I'm not a player that really likes to play Control very much. I don't know if that's because I feel like the game is slower, if there's too many decisions to make. I don't like not doing anything in the first four or five turns that's like particularly aggressive. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't necessarily appeal to me, and I'm always sort of envious of players that are good at playing Control. So why were you drawn to Control for this tournament?
Well, normally my kind of like player, everybody has like a player identity that like what decks they like to play. I mean, I think the best way to figure out your identity is if you play Power Cube ever. So like you open your pack and like you see like Sphinx's Revelation, Lightning Bolt, and like Birds of Paradise, right? Like all these cards are insanely powerful, but you're just drawn to a certain one that you're just going to draft over and over again.
And for you, that's all the Planeswalkers.
Yeah. Well, it's like Planeswalkers, kind of like Wraths, like Sphinx's Revelation, all these cards, they just make me happy. I like them. And plus, when I play Control, I feel like, since I've like put so many hours into this game, that I don't have to like I don't have to be scared about their draw step. Like that was always my least favorite thing with like, if I ever played like a green deck and constructed, I would always be afraid of their draw step. And now with a Control deck, you can like sit back, you can monitor everything, and you don't care what they draw. You have a counterspell, you have a removal. It's just great feels all around.
Well, and I imagine, sorry, I replaced some going this. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. And I'd imagine the fact that, you know, you've dedicated so many hours and Control lets you kind of use that amount of time you've spent playing the game to a greater ability than, say, playing aggro, where, not to say that aggro is more easily and more difficult to play, but aggro, you can learn your aggro deck and then be able to play it well. Yeah. While Control, you kind of need to know what other people are doing.
Exactly.
And so, like, you take a much greater advantage from playing Magic a lot, so you know what is kind of ahead of you versus... Yeah. The reverse of that, which is you need to play something that so that you don't need to worry about what your opponents are doing.
Yeah, like we printed out every single popular standard deck, and I would just have Eugene play against me constantly. Like
right.
Abzan Midrange, Sultai Whip, Jeskai Tokens, Teemer, like whatever could possibly be thrown at my deck, I would know how to play against it.
That's really interesting. So let's jump backwards for a quick second. You've been playing Magic how long now?
So, I mean, obviously I played Magic as a kid, so like...
When you say that, though, like, what age do you think you started?
I started probably, like, age 12, 13, you know, like, Kamigawa, Onslaught, like, oh, I opened a Kijiki, time to put it in my Goblin deck.
Sure, it's like fun Magic.
Yeah,
like... Kitchen table.
Kitchen table, kind of, I didn't know what I was doing, we had weird rules.
Sure.
But I started playing competitively, well, I went to my first draft in Shards, and I had a good time. And then I kind of didn't go back to a store for a while, but then I went to a draft at Rise, and that was a ton of fun.
Oh, like 2010, like early
2010. Yeah. And I got destroyed, right?
Yeah, that's a great format, though, right?
Yeah, I know. It was fun. Fantastic format. I got utterly destroyed, right? And
right. As everyone did in their first draft.
Yeah, like naturally being a gamer, like I wanted to know why I was losing.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, like I... Because when I was a kid, like, I would always beat my friends, like, oh, I'm the greatest kind of thing. And now, like, coming into this setting and realizing that, oh, I'm actually just terrible. Like, it really kind of lit me a fire.
What's the big fish, small pond problem?
Yeah.
Like, there's many, like, you know, oh, me and my brother, we play Super Smash Brothers all the time. And I, like, kick his ass every time. I'm the best. And then you go, like, to, like, a place where people are playing, like, in a store or something. And you're like, oh, I'm, like, terrible.
Yeah.
I'm not even... I, like, survived for less than 30 seconds.
Yeah. I think Alex and I met right around that same time, right around Eldrazi.
Yeah, that's kind of... I started in Zendikar, probably, and Eldrazi is when I first... Like, I think I, like, won my first draft at, like, All-Star Cards playing Zendikar the week before Eldrazi hit. And I was like, oh, no, I finally got good at this format.
I think I moved to L.A. I'd been, like, off Magic for, like, a year, maybe, and I, like, that was... Rise was when I got back in. So okay, so you start then and you play some tournaments and you got did you ever get into that Wednesday night scene over with Thomas and Nam over on the west side here?
No, I mean, obviously, like, I was trying to set goals for myself.
Sure.
So like at the first draft, it was like, I don't know, just find out what to do, and then like the next draft, it was just like make a better deck. Next step was like beat X person, right? I always wanted to
beat the best
Thomas,
player.
Right?
Yeah, he's a great player. He was a very good player.
He was, yeah, I haven't seen one.
He always had expensive cards. Yeah. He always had like really nice foils.
Sure.
Foil Jace, I remember. He had several of them.
Yeah, but I mean, I just ended up just drafting. I didn't even start playing a Constructed until like a year ago.
So, okay, we'll jump forward. I remember you spent some time playing at the bullpen over in Marina Del Rey.
Yeah.
And some of those players were pretty good. And I think I ran into you once or twice there. You and I actually played for the first time at the M12 pre-release.
Who won?
You did. Okay. And I had opened Primeval Titan and Garrick. And you still won. And you were like pretty hostile. Like you were like not very nice to me. But I think you were wearing like a Kings jersey.
Yeah.
And I was like, so are you a hockey fan or you just like to wear a Kings jersey? And you like glared at me and you were like, I'm a hockey fan. And you were like, it was like pretty funny.
I don't know. I was just trying to, you know, emulate like Thomas because that's how he would act, right?
Yeah.
And I felt like emulating him would like make me better at Magic.
Yeah.
And to an extent, that is the rapport that I keep when I'm playing Magic against people.
Pretty serious.
Like very serious, very like I don't show any emotion.
Yeah.
I mean, like, during the game, I'm going to be completely stone-faced. But, I mean, you know, after the match, it'll be, like,
yeah,
nice,
friendly.
Cordial.
Sure.
Yeah, what's going on, right?
So you end up over at Heidi Ho, and this is Kessler. I remember him calling me and saying, hey, there's this place, Heidi Ho, and they're doing Magic, and nobody knows what they're doing, and you can win a bunch of prizes if you show up there, and it's totally, it's brand new. And
Wild West.
Wild West. This must have been 3.5 years ago now, or 3 years ago.
Yeah, 3.5.
And you were probably just playing there at that point.
Well, when the week after the bullpen closed,
yeah.
I went there and like it, I was just like blown away,
just floored.
And event starts late, 7:30 the draft starts, and this is completely true. The tables, there were 24 people there.
Sure.
The tables were.
I remember this, yeah.
The tables were 8-7-9.
That's
just
pretty great.
Just reckless abandon, I don't care. And I remember, like, I was drafting, and, like, I opened, like, a Bloodline Keeper, so obviously my deck's
awesome.
Insane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, like, in pack one, I get a pick 4 Curse of Death's Hold, right? And then I you know, kind of, like, trying to be a little helpful and like keep my kind of serious rapport. I'm like, guys, you know, this card is really insane, right? Then someone like snaps off right next to me. Oh, it's not good against my deck. Jesus. I'm like, Jesus Christ, right?
Yeah. So go ahead.
This is the better part of the story, right? So I end up having to play him in the finals, right?
Okay.
This guy who snaps off is not good against my deck, right? Right after he tells me Curse of Death's Hold is awful, I like
Curse of Death's Hold, by the way, for anybody who's wondering,
it's
two black,
three
colorless, all of your opponent's creatures get -1/-1.
It's absolutely inserted.
It's an enchantment.
Yeah, so after I like crush a bunch of people with my Curse of Death's Hold and Bloodline Keeper,
right.
I have to play him in the finals, right?
Sure.
So obviously he's a bit of a chatterbox and won't shut up about like, oh man, I'm getting mana screwed as I like mulligan to 4 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, Jesus, who taught you?
Right.
And then, so he has 5 mana, right?
Sure.
And he has 1 creature, because I just played Curse of Death's Hold, like,
right.
Wrathing him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, he has 2 cards in hand. He plays Infernal Plunge, sacrificing his last guy, adding 3 mana, and then playing Banefire Dragon. The 7 mana, like, wrath your opponent's board every turn.
Oof.
He just crushes me with it. And then I go into, like, clinical depression. And then, after everything's done, I ask the TO, so what do I get for losing in the finals? I got 1 pack.
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
Yep. The first time I ever went to Heidi Ho, I think it was the first tournament they ever had, or second, and it was a Legacy tournament. It was, like, in a big poster on the wall, Legacy. I show up, me and my friend Adam. Adam's playing Miracles, or what it was, the countertop back in the day. And I was playing Affinity. Like just straight up, like it was like middle Scars block. We show up, it's us two, and then every other person is playing a pre-con deck that they just opened. And we both like make each of us make $20, walk out, and we're just like, I don't know what just happened.
I would play there every weekend. Yeah.
One person I think had like 12 of the same bad 5/4 for 7 mana from like Shards of Alara block and Bance, and it was like, okay.
technically a Legacy deck. So okay, so you show up to Heidi Ho. This is, I think, where the story gets really interesting, because I think this is around the time that I kind of met you for the second time, and I started going to Heidi Ho. I lived around the corner from there.
Sure.
And as the store was forming, you know, it was really interesting to see like players coming in, and a lot of people were kind of turned off by how disorganized it was at first.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Bird sort of was around for a while, kind of making things happen. So people probably remember him a little bit. And then there was this great core group that you were a part of. And I think you kind of, you sort of led it. And Eugene obviously was part of that original group. I played with you guys a lot back then. I don't play at the store as much anymore, but back we would draft on Tuesday. Super Tuesday started then.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I think Cliff, who just qualified, Austin was in that group, Brandon Fisher, right?
Yeah.
There was probably a good like 7-8 people who would consistently show up.
Mm-hmm.
So now, in the last probably 2.5 to 3 years, as you guys have played so consistently, the progress of top 8 in PTQs, and somebody wins one, and then a couple people are day 2 in Grand Prix, and somebody wins a Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Now here you are, and 4 of that original 8 people are qualified for the Pro Tour. What do you take from that whole experience and say, like, aside from the obvious just man hours, just practice, what do you think kind of helped bring you guys from that place of just what everybody is, a group of players at a Magic store, to legitimate, like, shot at being pros now?
Just surrounding yourself with people that you like, and people that you know have the same mindset. Like, they all want to improve. They don't want to stagnate. And I think that's the problem with a lot of stores, is, like, they don't kind of branch out and they don't think outside the box. They don't think that FNM is the final frontier, right?
Yeah.
They see these pros and everybody, like, winning everything. It's like, oh, man, I want to be like them. That's what I wanted to do, instead of just win FNM and get, like, what, 7 packs, right? That's not my end goal, right? So what I did was, I mean, I just kind of, like, brought who I thought were the best players, made them my friends, and then I'm like, guys, we can do this. And, you know, like, there are certain techniques just for, like, practicing and improving. Like, we don't tell bad beat stories anymore to each other, because that's not really conducive to learning, right?
Like, yeah, you buy bad beats, you mean, I got Mana Screw, or he top decked this. Or...
Yeah, yeah, like, saying that just doesn't mean anything. Like,
because somebody, at pros always, that's going to happen to everybody, equally.
Yeah, yeah. So you just, the question that you ask yourself is, what could I have done better that game?
Right.
So we just started asking that question more often, and it just kind of improved from there, and, like, we started printing out decks, you know, like, playing against the field, and then just generally understanding Magic and how to play it.
Okay. So now what's the next step for you as a Magic player?
I'm going to go to more GPs. I really want to chase silver. Okay. Silver pro status. I have 11 pro points right now, so I need 9 more to make silver. So I really want
to
do that.
Hoping to do pretty well at the Pro Tour. Okay, yeah. So you're at Grand Prix Denver, and you're in day 2, and you've been day 2 before.
Yeah,
and
it's nothing new.
Yeah, right. It's been the last year or two that's it's been happening. So right. Now you look at the standings, you're in the top 8.
Sure.
What's the feeling like? I mean, what does it feel like to make the top 8 of a Grand Prix? It's the first time.
Well, I kind of want to talk about day 1 a little bit, because, like, that was one of
Feel
our...
Feel free, take us through it.
Yeah, one of our goals was, like, as a team, was, like, 9-0 a Grand Prix, 9-0 day 1, right?
Right.
And I finally got to do that, and, like, what that meant was, like, I could look at the standings and say, I'm going to play this guy next round.
Right.
And then I knew their deck list.
Right.
And I was at breakfast, we were, like, talking about sideboarding, right?
Right.
Just, like, trying to next level, get any advantage you can. And then, like, it kind of sucked on day 2. I lost my first 2 rounds.
Oh, wow.
And I was really, really demoralized at X2. And then I swept 3 in a row, and then was able to draw in.
So that the vibe amongst your group when you guys travel to a big event like this, everything from the night before the first day, the breakfast before day 2, when you lose your first 2 and you guys are kind of meeting up between rounds, what's the vibe in your group like? Is it a positive, supportive vibe? Is it just kind of a mellow?
No, it's always positive. It's always, we got this. It's always, we can do this. We've done this before. There are no challenges we can't beat, right?
Okay, so it's fully positive.
Yeah.
Okay. So you,
because there's no negativity. We can't say, oh man, he did this and then I lost. It's more like, I didn't get there. What are steps I can take so that next time I can win?
Sure. Or if there's still a statistical chance, what can I do before this tournament's over? Probably.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So you draw in. You're in the top 8. It's the first time. It's the first time that, other than Eugene, have any of you guys made a top 8 of a Grand Prix?
No. I think Eugene was the only one who top 8. Well, Adam's top 8 GP.
Sure, but he wasn't. Was he at that event?
No, he wasn't at the event. He's been kind of aloof recently.
In and out, right? Okay, so you're in the top eight.
Yeah.
You know your matchup. What do you do to prepare yourself right then? You say, I have four matches of left to win.
Three matches.
Oh, three.
So they give you the deck list of everybody. They give you everybody's deck list. And I got paired against the Mardu guy first round.
Sure.
His deck was interesting. He had like Bloodsoak Champion, which is really good against me, and like Timuret, which I was like very afraid of.
Right.
But
Bloodsoak Champion is like a recursive.
It's the one black, it's 2/1 that anytime you attack, you can pay two to bring it back.
Yeah. I was initially I was afraid, but he made a really big mistake against me. Like in a low resource game where like we didn't have very many cards in hand, he thought seized me while I was vulnerable after playing a vault, and he didn't take a Pearl Lake Ancient.
Okay, that's like your big finisher.
Yeah, I only have two in the deck. And I guess it was a mistake on his part, and like he took it like a counter spell.
Maybe he like didn't understand that was your big card.
Yeah, like if he takes Pearl Lake Ancient, it's gonna take me a year to kill him
because I have to draw the other one.
I have to find my other one. Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
So that worked out. And then the next match against Valentin Mackle, he made a severe misplay. He had seven mana and a Rhino out.
He's playing Abzan?
Abzan midrange, okay. Yeah. He had Rhino, seven lands, and I had a Perilous Vault out with open mana. He attacks me with Rhino. I take it.
Right.
And he reads Perilous Vault, then he plays Fleecemane Lion.
Huh.
And then end of turn, I crack Vault. And then he says, in response, I'll Monstrous.
Whoa, he didn't get it.
Yeah, he didn't get it.
Ooh, he like read it to see if it had Remover, destroy, yeah. And then like red remove, and then his brain was like, oh, it says destroy.
Yeah.
It's exactly what.
So that's a huge
misplay. He could have had another threat on board in his hand, like safe from removal or counterspell. And
yeah. Fleecemane's pretty good against you if it gets live.
Yeah. I mean, my only way to get rid of it is Vault, and he just like played right into that. So
then the finals.
Yeah. I've watched the match twice against Sperling just so it could sink in. Because like, the first thing that I thought when I won was like, all right, who else do I have to play now, right?
Sperling's a good player. I played him like two or three different times in PTQs. He's like a local guy.
Yeah, Sperling's really good. Game one, he didn't draw his fifth land to get like hit Wingmate Rock for a while. And then I kind of had a nasty blowout where he attacked with Lion.
Yeah.
Then I played Pearl Lake. He went to kill it, and I negated, and then
I've watched the coverage. Seen it.
Yeah, so that was bad for him. And then in the second game, like if he didn't brick for like a couple turns and like chain together some rhinos, I might have been in trouble. But from the outset, like he already mulliganed, and like thought seized him, and like it was kind of rough for him in general.
You got the bad beat on the mulligan. Okay, so you win a Grand Prix. You're playing control.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a definition standpoint for people listening, define control. What is like a control game plan?
Control game plan is to manage the early game so that you can make way for your finisher to end the game. You essentially want to stop them from doing anything and then play your one trump card that can beat them.
Kill them,
Some combination of removal, card draw, counter spells.
Yeah.
Play discard if you're black.
Wrath of God.
Wrath of God if you're white.
Effect. Yeah. And
blue generally has some type of card draw spell to help you get through it. Normally, control is a combination of blue and then black, white, or red.
Yeah.
Yeah, and control can win with anything from a 2/1 flyer that is untargetable to like a 7/7 that just is good.
My finisher was Pearl Lake Ancient, and normally you want your finishers to be difficult to remove or difficult to block.
Right.
So, I mean, Pearl Lake Ancient is
all of those.
Nearly impossible to kill, and with Vault, it's like you can clear the way of everything and then have your player 6/7. And then they can't beat it.
I mean, in Modern, classically, the control deck is blue-white, and the threat for them is
Celestial Colonnade.
Yeah, Celestial Colonnade. Yeah. The land, which is, you know, it's a 4/4 flying vigilance land creature that, like, they can't deal with it on their turn because it's a land.
Yeah, it doesn't get hit by
Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, it's like it dodges two of the three major removal spells in the format, and the third one kind of just makes it slightly worse. It doesn't even get rid of it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the game plan normally is stop your opponent
mm-hmm.
entirely, try and make them. So whatever they're going to do to kill you, they can't. And then in the very late game, once you've kind of demoralized them, swing in with.
I'd say in standard usually has a nice, like, usually we'll have like a nice control deck at some point in most standard formats. They'll be like, and standard is usually not so abundant with like really, really difficult to deal with threats that a control deck. I guess what I'm trying to say is that in modern, it's difficult to have a traditional control deck in modern because there's so many recursive threats. There's so many things that are untargetable. There's so many fast strategies. Your traditional 4-mana Wrath of God effect or 1-for-1 removal spells just often aren't going to be able to get through enough to win the game.
I mean, the statement modern and control, and the reason control has had problems kind of being a solid deck in modern for so long, is modern is very, normally at least, very, very, very diverse. And the way it's diverse is all very different.
Right.
You have combo decks. And most decks have a combo finish. So you had, before today, you had Birthing Pod that, like, if they got a pod on board and they got a creature, control had a huge problem stopping them. Yeah. You had Infect, where if they got one creature and they got into you, you would have, like, you know, good removal for them, good permanent removal for those guys. Like, the width, the breadth of different strategies you had to be able to handle was difficult to not be doing, like, stopping what your opponent's doing and have a proactive plan yourself.
Well, you said it earlier, and it makes... And it's one of my true beliefs that why control is good is if you put in the hours and you understand what everybody else is doing, you can have an upper hand on them.
Right.
And with modern, it's really hard because there's so many decks and like anybody can be playing anything.
Right. And on top of that, you know, you only have 15 cards in your sideboard.
Yeah.
Like eventually you're just going to like, and it's in modern because it's so diverse, you know, when a deck is dominant, you generally we'll only play it once or twice, maybe twice if you're lucky. Normally you play 15 different decks in a tournament, and if you're playing 15 different decks, that means you could maybe have one card in your sideboard per matchup if you had covered everything, and that's going to hurt your chances against the decks you need to be better against.
It's also hard to do the thing when you're prepping. I've done this so many times at like PTQs where you're talking about like, oh, well, these are the four best decks and this is my sideboard and it's really good against those four decks. And then you play 9 rounds and you play those decks 3 out of 9 rounds. And then the other 6, you're just playing things that you were just unprepared for or not necessarily unprepared, but your sideboard's just not that good against.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the nature of the game in modern.
It's too wide open to really pinpoint like a good kind of blanket defense. Well, in standard, everybody's going to come at you with creatures.
Right.
Modern, they can come at you with combo.
I mean, and actually, it's one of the reasons I'm sad Dig Through Time is gone versus Treasure Cruise, because Treasure Cruise encourages a player to play more of a tempo game because it's all about velocity.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the problem with modern, and one of the problems is there's not a very good way to kind of get ahead of opponents. There's not a good blue card draw spell, really, especially now that the two that they printed both got banned. So, like, what Dig Through Time kind of allowed, it allowed control players to be able to play a little bit more silver bullety plan, where you're like, okay, I need to be able to handle every matchup that I possibly can face. Yeah. This card's going to help me find the cards I need against those opponents when I need them.
Gotcha.
And that no longer, that doesn't really exist in modern. Control doesn't really have that available to them. Like, one of the that's why tempo has kind of always been better, because it's all about, you have your little threat out there that's going to kill them, and you just have to, like, survive until it kills them versus stopping them and then killing them once you stopped what they were doing.
Yeah.
So if you're a seasoned control player and you go into a tournament, you kind of explained why you think it's a good strategy. What do you think are the most important things to keep in mind when you're playing control?
Well, threat assessment is probably the number one kind of control player skill that you need to have. Like, you need to understand how far you can push your life total and how safe you can feel at a certain life total to where you have to put on the brakes. A good example is if you watch the finals match against Sperling.
There will be a link below on rocketjump.com to that video.
You can go watch Andrew win a Grand Prix.
Cool. So, like, he plays a Rexxasha Death Dealer against me, which is like it's a 2-2. Right. So
it's the 2-2 that can pump to be a 4.
Yeah, right.
And regenerate.
So,
it's a cat demon.
I mean, I have an opportunity to answer it, but I'm not too afraid of it because I'm at a good life total. And he deals, like, 11 damage with this one card, right?
Right.
But I prevent him from doing anything else, and once I have an opportunity to remove it, I remove it, and then I play my finisher, and it's all over for him.
Right, and you know, your catch-all answer, which in standard is Perilous Fault, answers it, but you just have to get to that point. But the nice thing about I'm never going to say it correctly.
Rexxasha
Death Dealer is that it's a mana sink that they have to spend mana to kind of make it do stuff. So, like, they're delaying their game plan, allowing you to kind of just survive long enough to get that Perilous Vault online and kill
them. So, like, threat assessment and life total management is probably the number one skill, the number one and two skills that a control player really needs to, because you need to evaluate how they can win. Evaluating how they can win is evaluating their threats, and then evaluating how you can win is your own life total, so where you can have your finisher win the game for you.
Would you say that your understanding of how to efficiently use your mana, because one of these decks is ultimately looking to be able to do two things in one turn. That's the ultimate goal, is play two spells, activate something and cast a spell, remove something and draw a card, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, in Standard, you have a lot of tap lands, so like sequencing is a pretty big problem. And in Modern, too, because your colonnades come in tapped.
Right. And in Modern, because of, you know, life total being so important, your lands are also a resource. Like, when do you play the fetch into a thing, or when do you get a non-shock land?
Yeah. So, I mean, with mana efficiency, it's a pretty big thing in Standard. Modern, I think less so, because you have a wealth of all your colors, and not everything has to come in tapped, but... I think sequencing your lands is a big thing in Standard and not so much in Modern. But overall, I don't know what I'm saying. Continue.
No, overall, we're incredibly proud of you for winning a Grand Prix. Right. You did playing Control, and it's really awesome. And
Well, one thing I did want to get into before we finish up is, you know, if you were Modern, and I know you know Modern relatively well, you were King of the Hill for the first six rounds on...
Yeah.
During the last GP. Yes. And... playing Control and how you would kind of, what you would think to look out for against some specific decks, the ones that are probably most likely to kind of survive into the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
For instance, Splinter Twin.
Splinter Twin's a good matchup. Which Control deck am I playing right now?
Blue, white, red.
Blue, white, red? Okay, yeah. Control against blue, white, red, it's definitely a end of turn kind of game. So you have Path, which is like an answer all for them.
Right. It's like you're probably your best card against them.
Yeah, like, they're rarely going to win on turn four. Normally, a way that they do beat you is they kind of beat you on the end of turn eight when they have, like, eight lands, and then if you don't have ample counter spells to when you get in a counter fight, then they can win through that. Or they can actually just play Pestermite and, like, attack you to death.
Because they also, they need to get out from under Mana Leak, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. They have to get around it.
Yeah, and Mana Leak obviously gets worse throughout the game. But overall, I think against Twins, probably like 70-30 for you. And you have Counterflux in the board,
right,
which
right.
is insane.
You have Counterspells and cheap and efficient removal. That's like that's like really good against them.
Plus Counterflux, man. How do they win?
All right, now how do you beat Big Daddy Rhino?
Okay, so...
And Abzan midrange would be the second half of the statement.
All right, I'm talking about the junk deck?
Yeah.
All right, so against the junk deck as blue, white, red, their best card against you is Liliana. Easily.
Right.
Tarmogoyf gets pathed. Ooze just gets bolted immediately. Thoughtseize can be a pretty big problem. What they can end up doing is kind of Thoughtseizing your advantage spells to make it a low-resource game, which is what you don't want. So if you can kind of dodge Thoughtseize and then kind of get the Liliana, like kill the Liliana with like Resto or Colonnade, then you can win, but... Normally, I think the matchup is probably about 40 to 45 in your favor. So, I mean, actually not in your favor.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, now here's a hard ball deck that might be a little hard. Birthing Pod. I mean, Scapeshift.
Scapeshift. Scapeshift is a tough one because in game one, you have all these bolts and helixes. It's kind of like...
don't do anything.
It's like really inefficient. So, actually, what I like doing against decks like Scapeshift is just trying to race them. So like
start firing off your bolts.
Just fire
on turn
like
one.
fire your bolt at their face on turn one, play Snapcaster on turn two.
Right.
Or like
right,
if you
right.
like if you have like Snapcasters 2-1 for one, it's really, really good against them.
Right.
What's my next matchup?
Affinity.
Affinity is probably 50-50 for you game one.
Okay.
Because you have Bolt Path, Helix, all really good against them.
Right.
Mana Leak is actually pretty strong against them on the play because normally they can't really power out their two mana spell on turn one.
Right.
So if you have two mana and then they go for like a Plating or a Ravager or Overseer, you can counter it.
They're like right. the most important spells to counter.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Andrew played Affinity at this at GP Omaha.
I did play Affinity at Omaha.
And I was excited when I saw the coverage. I saw, we talked about this, I think, last week on the pod. We were talking about Ghostfire Blade.
Yes, I had Ghostfire
Blade. He played Ghostfire Blade in his Affinity list.
Hey, actually, I do want to ask, why Ghostfire Blade?
It's Plating number 5, and I think Spellskite was going to be really prevalent in this tournament.
Okay.
Your way to beat most normally your trump card is kind of Etch Champion, so Etch Champion with Ghostfire Blade goes right through Spellskite.
Right,
really, really good. Yeah, it's like incredibly good.
The only thing I don't like about Ghostfire Blade is that it costs 3 to equip it to Vault Scourge, which is
yeah, so good. Bad value.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting, cool. Well, so your Pro Tour coming up is not a Modern Pro Tour.
It is Standard. It's Brussels is Standard.
Standard Pro Tour, but we have 3 of the other guys in this group going to the Modern Pro Tour?
Yes. My teammates, Eugene and Jai Chen, are going, and Austin is going as well.
Excellent. And you're going to be attending, I'm assuming, all of the reachable Grand Prix in
yes,
the near future.
Yes, in the near future. I'm also queued for the regional. I won the first PPTQ I went to.
What was your experience like at that? We talked about that a lot when it was getting announced. What? How did you think?
Well, you just play a bunch of doofuses and Swiss.
It's kind of what we talked about. I was like, I want to be able to be a doofus and show up and win. This makes it harder for me to do. Yeah.
You play against, in the Swiss, it's pretty easy to top 8 these things. Mine had 52 players, I think.
Okay.
So, I mean,
not that much harder than even some pre-releases.
Yeah, it's just like a regular GPT kind of thing. So, like, you go X1 and you make top 8. And you play like people who aren't as experienced. Like, I remember the guy I played was playing like Welkin Turn in his Jeskai Tokens deck. I was like,
well, you need that 2/1 flyer for 2 that can't block.
And I'm like, man, what are you doing? And then, in the top 8, you just kind of have to. Normally, the first round should be pretty easy. And then you just got to win coin flips against people you know. Because. That's you come with your friends, right? And they're usually good enough to be there too.
Right.
So like that's what happened to me. I end up having to play like 2 like high caliber players and just good matchups for me, won the coin flips.
Games just went well for you.
Yep.
Happens.
Yes. One last thing before I think we start signing off, I guess, is so you're not in the next Pro Tour. Are your predictions for what decks are going to probably see some play?
A lot of Affinity. And I think that people are going to try Scapeshift. Scapeshift and Affinity are going to be popular.
Because those are kind of the 2 of the decks that didn't get as hurt from the bannings as other ones. Splinter
and
Twin.
I think the big boogeyman is definitely going to be Abzan Midrange. Or just junk in general.
Sure.
It got to keep its shiny new toys while everyone else.
And I think it makes its matchups better because like junk was not so good against Birthing Pod, right? It was probably like 40-60 for the junk player, and now that like a bad, very prevalent matchup is gone, they have like its equity goes up.
Makes sense.
Does that deck have good like Splinter Twin feels like it would be a decent matchup, even
Splinter
though they have a lot
Twin
of removal.
An amazing matchup for that deck.
Okay. Yeah. So those are the decks
Path to Exile.
Right.
And Abrupt Decay.
Yeah, Abrupt Decay is like...
That's like the best card against them.
Yeah,
they
it's
can't
insane.
Have it. Kills their combo.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. It's a buy.
Like, Abrupt Decay, like, that you couldn't have printed a magic card that was better against the deck than Abrupt Decay versus Splinter Twin.
Yeah.
It's impossible to beat that card.
They have Kiki Jiki, come on.
Yeah, but just kill the creature in response.
Well, no, you play the 5 drop that steals things.
Yeah,
that card sees a lot of
play. If I was playing a Twin and
Word
I was
of Seizing.
And I was anticipating a lot of Abrupt Decays, I might just go ahead and play Apostle's Blessing in my deck.
All right. Well, that's kind of it for today. Do you have anything else you want to tell the world at large?
Not really. Thanks for listening, I guess.
Thanks for being our guest today, Andrew. I'm going to see if I can convince Andrew to twist his arm to try to bring the whole Heidi Ho Pro Tour queued
crew all
for
at once.
A storytelling session.
Get as many blue mics in the room
as
possible.
Hear
It'll
the
really
story.
Hot.
We heard kind of Andrew's perspective, but I'd like to hear everyone's.
It'll happen one day.
Perspective when it's possible. We can get everybody in the same room. But thanks for coming by. It was fun talking to you today. Hopefully you'll be our guest again in the future after you win your next GP or Pro Tour.
Pro Tour,
yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And keep on, you know, being handsome and all those things.
Oh,
you
too.
Oh, stop it. Andrew does not have a Twitter, but there may be a link, like a secret bonus Twitter link to Andrew's Twitter if he decides to reveal it to the world.
Sure.
You guys can look next to the video.
You have
him.
To find it.
You can look. It might be somewhere near the video of him winning a Grand Prix if we didn't mention that already.
Yeah, that is below. You can check that out. Also, if you ever want to play against him and see if you can beat him, he's always at the doorsteps of Heidi Ho.
Heidi Ho Comics.
In Santa Monica. Los Angeles, California.
And the magic side of the store.
I think actually if you beat him at the pre-release, you got a pack. Just
yes.
For doing it.
He's gunslinging.
I was gunslinging, yeah.
As always, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at Kes Wiley.
I am Ben Bateman Media on every social media platform.
Twitter, all of the
Instagram.
Social media. Yeah, Instagram mostly.
I always put it out because I hate Twitter, but I use it anyway.
The podcast, which is probably the best way to get a hold of us because that's the one we'll respond to the most quickly, is the MMCast, at the MMCast.
And always be sure to check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone.
Yep.
With Jimmy Wong.
Which is at The Command Cast on Twitter.
Look at you. You got it right. It's great. You got it right this week. Tweet at both of us. We didn't do a deck list this week. We're going to tech something awesome, brewish. Soon.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, question of the week, comment below, send it to us on Twitter, find us on Facebook if you want to be super creepy. What deck are you excited to play in this new world of Modern? What new deck do you want to play now that all of those big bads are gone?
And blue, if you were to fall off a boat and you had to swim to shore, how long do you think you could swim in water before your body would give out? You answer that question.
Yeah, you have to do both.
So your body has to give out and you have to swim?
Yeah.
You feel free to answer that, but that'll probably get cut on the podcast. Thank you for tuning in today,
yeah,
guys.
We'll see you next
awesome.
Week.
Thanks for coming, Andrew. We'll see you guys soon.
Perfect.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.